This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
Welcome to this week's episode of DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry with Sam Lau.
Hey, hey.
We're recording just after the close today, August 26th. Sam, I hope you enjoy this next week. It's your last week of wearing white.
It's creeping up. It crept up on me, I guess. I didn't realize it was coming up that quickly, but fortunately, I don't wear white too much. I don't think I've ever worn white pants, at least. So.
Well, I was doing the things to keep an eye on for next week, and it's like, it's Pizza Friday next Friday. And I was like, man, it's September already.
Pizza Thursday. Yeah. Pizza Thursday. That's right. But the real Pizza Friday is coming right up too for Jobs Day. So that'll be a good one. I'm not going to front run you there, but yeah.
So we had an interesting day today. The thing everyone was waiting for happened this morning. And we talk about the market's reaction right now.
Yeah, it was a bit of an eye opener for the week. Let's look at the board here, and the S&P 500 is down 4% on the week. If we look at it today it was down 3.4%. So a lot of that 4% move just occurred in today's trading day. So, you know, of course, we brought this up last week that one of the things to keep an eye on for this week and for today was Jackson Hole. Was going on, and Powell spoke. So that is a little clue if you can't wait to the macro section on what might have perturbed markets today. But with that, down 4% on the week to date for the S&P 500, making it down 14% on a year-to-date basis. The best performing sector was energy, which was up 4.2% on the week, making that an up 53% on the year-to-date basis. On the other end of the spectrum, we had technology, which was the laggard, down 5.6% on a week-to-date basis. And because of the moves that we had, I didn't check to see if it was largely because of today or just it was something that we saw through the course of the week, but consumer staples now has dropped out of that group of three that we had in terms of positive year-to-date performers within the various sectors of the S&P 500. Consumer staples was down 3.2% on the week. So now it is down 2.2% on a year-to-date basis, seeing red again on the year-to-date basis for that sector.
So I pulled it up as you were, I could tell where you were going. So I pulled it up and staples was down 2.5% today. So it looks like that's what today is, just what dropped it negative.
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely staples and Powell pressers, I guess, are not pressers, but Powell speeches don't go hand in hand, at least for this week, again, on the year-to-date basis. Moving over to fixed income land, looking at treasury yields, starting off with the two-year treasury note, it closes the week at 3.38. That's up a whopping 15 basis points. From where we were last Friday and versus yesterday, that's just up a basis point or so. So that's not, you know, we can't attribute that to Powell as much as we could for the equity side of things, but up 15 basis points nonetheless to close out August 26, 2022. Moving over to the 10-year, that was up 6 basis points on the week. Now back above 3%. It closed today at 3.03% on the 10-year treasury yield. Pretty much flat from where we were yesterday. And then looking at the bond here, it closed the week at 3.19. 2 basis points lower than where it closed last Friday there. So a little bit of a rally coming on the 30-year Treasury yield today off of Powell. That's down 5 basis points just on 5 basis points in yield just today for the long bond yield. What we saw with regards to the yield spreads here on the spread between the 2-year and the 10-year notes on the yield there, is now at a negative 0.36 percent for the 2s 10s. That's in 9 basis points over the previous week. Similar type of move in the 3-month 10-year differential in yields there. That's in 10 basis points, bringing it to a differential of 0.18. So 18 basis points spread on the 3-month 10-year part of the curve there. What that meant for the the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate is it's down. It's down 40 basis points on the week to date. Treasuries component within the ag is the best performer, down about 20 basis points, followed by IG corporate credit, which was down 40 basis points, and then the agency MBS, which was down 70 basis points. But no love or any sign of green anywhere within the fixed income cohorts that we look at. Looks like EM is down 30 basis points, bank loans about the same, and then high yield corporate credit kind of taking it on the chin in sympathy with what we saw in the U.S. equity market. That's down 1.5% on a week to date basis there. So that may have taken that. No, it didn't. So it's down 10.5% on the week. I'm sorry, on the year to date basis. And then IG corporate credit is still down about 15% on the week. EM had been holding a little bit of positive, I want to say earlier this morning when I was looking at it on the week to date basis, but it couldn't hold through the day. So it closed negative for the week to date, and it's still the worst performing sector within this cohort, down almost 19% year to date. Then moving over to commodity land, commodities were the lone positive performer here, up almost 2% on the Bloomberg Commodity Index for the week-to-date basis. Looking over at WTI crude oil, it maintained or at least closed the week above 90 again with a $92.9 per barrel of WTI crude oil. That's up 2.3% on the week, still up. It's up about 24% on the year-to-date basis. Looking over across the complex here is kind of a mixed bag, but coffee was the best performer week-to-date, up 12%. Up 12% on the week for coffee. The worst performer is unleaded gasoline futures on the front month contract. That was down about 6%. Unleaded gasoline has just been getting pummeled so far during this month and second quarter, down about 20% for both of those periods there, just after reaching its high. And I want to say somewhere around mid-June before just really seeing the demand side getting crushed as people were trying to battle and make decisions around driving around the summer season. But we've seen prices on gasoline come down quite significantly during that period where to the point that it's down about 20% on a quarter to date basis, but it's still up 27% for the year to date. We'll see what the rest of the year has in store for that commodity future.
Yeah, and then finally, that's at least there's some good side of the gasoline prices coming down.
Yeah,
is you know the impact on inflation. So
yeah, hopefully it eases the burden on people's the price baskets that we look at there. So we'll take a look later in the macro section to see how that impacted this week's PCE price basket there. We did forget, it was pointed out to us, that we forgot our friend Bitcoin here in terms of how they did last week. Last week, it was also negative, along with this whole host of a sea of red across all the broad indices that we look at. This week is the same thing. It's down 2.8%. on the week-to-date basis, down 55% year-to-date. Still just trying to maintain above that 20,000 a coin level to close this week at 20,700 thereabouts as the point of this recording.
It does seem like it's held that base though, at least that 20,000 base, pretty solidly here. It looks like since that low, kind of mid-June.
Yeah, just bouncing above that level there. So.
It's funny to look at the chart. It's like it bounced around 40,000 for a few months. Then, you know, once it dipped to 30, it bounced around there for a month, then it dipped to 20 and it's been around that 20,000 a coin level for the past 3 months. So, you know, you definitely have that, that bias of round number, that round number bias going on.
Yeah, I'm pulling up as you're talking here. That truly just those kind of those technical price support and behavioral levels that you're talking about are pretty strong there. And then when it goes down, it's just like a stair step down to the next level. So, you know, one of these days, maybe you'll start to see this. I mean, I'm the way with some of these cryptocurrencies go, you just see those stair step drops down. But then the move up is just equally the same in terms of the magnitude or even higher sometimes, just depending on the fervor behind it.
So you're saying we should be up to 30,000, so we'll get a 50% gain. The next move is going to be 50% gain.
Yeah, just watch the news, I suppose.
I guess it's a 50% gain or a 50% loss, either going to 10 or 30.
Other direction, right? Yeah, it could with this one. So with that wrap up on the market, what do we have in store for us for what happened this past week in Macroland?
Yeah, on Tuesday, we got the S&P Global Manufacturing and Services PMI numbers. The manufacturing number was expected to be at 51.8, came in slightly below expectations at 51.3, but still above 50, so still a little bit expansionary there. Services had fallen below 50 in its last print, so it was a little bit contractionary. It's expected to come in at 49.8, but actually came in well below expectations at 44.1. If you look at it, the manufacturing numbers, that's the lowest print since July of 2020. Service is the lowest number since May of 2020. Basically, the decline is just attributed to rising interest rates and inflation. On Thursday, we did get the first update to the second quarter GDP. If you remember, the first estimate was a negative 0.9% for second quarter GDP. So that's when people were talking about how it's the technical recession because it's two quarters of negative GDP. It was estimated that GDP would revise back up to negative 0.8%. The estimate right before the release there on Thursday was updated to a negative 0.7%, but it actually came in at a negative 0.6%. So we do get another couple more updates to GDP before it's a finalized number. So we would need to have those that 0.3% come through both revisions to get up to a zero or a flat GDP growth. So it doesn't seem likely, but just given that we got the first estimate was stronger than expected, and maybe give some people hope that maybe we weren't in a technical recession in the second quarter. Then this morning, a big data release day, we got personal income and spending. Income came in at only up 0.2%, was expected to be up 0.6%. Spending was expected to be up 0.1%. Spending was up 0.1% and was expected to be up 0.5%. So some slowdown there on that side of things. We also got the Fed's preferred inflation measure, the PCE, came out. That number had drifted down to, it had been, the expectation had drifted down to be flat month over month, similar to the CPI number, but actually surprised with a little bit of a deflation at a negative 0.1%. It was a 1% last month, so a big drop there. That brought the year-over-year PCE down to 6.3% from 6.8% last month. Core PCE, so that's the Fed's preferred inflation measure, is what they look at when they're trying to target their 2% inflation. That expected to be up 0.2% from 0.6% last month. Actually came in slightly below it at 0.1%. So that brought the core year-over-year number to 4.6%. Mark Kimbrough, our analyst who put this together, said it's steps in the right direction, the 0.1. And getting that core down to 4.6, but that we still need a lot of steps to get to where the Fed wants us to be, especially at this pace. It's going to take some time. And then this morning, we also got the University of Michigan 5 to 10 year inflation expectations. It's a survey number, which we discount, and we kind of made fun of it last week. That preliminary was expected to be flat at 3.0%. It actually came in slightly below at 2.9%. So really nothing to see here from that survey. And then the big news, you know, normally we talk about a lot of the Fed speak out there. There was a lot of Fed speak during this week, but really it was all eyes on Jerome Powell this morning. He started off his speech by saying that Today, his remarks will be shorter, his focus narrower, and his message more direct. And surprisingly, his speech came in, I think I saw on Twitter, 8 minutes, 28 seconds. So that's pretty short. I was fearful of him being similar to someone we affectionately call Lope Dub, when he says, "I don't have a lot to talk about," and then talks for a long time. So an 8 minute, 8.5 minutes was pretty impressive from a Fed chair in a speech.
And yeah, pretty tight.
It's interesting. They released the transcript. They released what he's going to say before, like as he's speaking or right before he's speaking. So people were debating about, or I was seeing quotes on Twitter popping up about what he was going to say before he actually said it. And I decided I would watch him speak so that you could, you know, if you could see how he, you know, his intonation, how he's reacting to things or reacting to what he's going to say, maybe pick up more than just reading the words on the screen. But a couple quotes here that I thought were interesting. He did say, while higher interest rates, slower growth, and softer labor market conditions will bring down inflation, they also bring some pain to households and businesses. These are the unfortunate costs of reducing inflation, but a failure to restore price stability would mean far greater pain. So he's starting to talk about how, you know, the Fed's going to induce some pain, but I guess it's the lesser of two evils. And then also he did say that, when talking about inflation, he said, a single month's improvement falls far short of what the committee will need to see before we are confident that inflation is moving down. So, this last data print is not really, it's much more the Fed's going to continue to be hawkish and raise interest rates. And then finally, the last quote I thought was interesting when he said, restoring price stability will likely require maintaining a restrictive policy stance for some time. The historical record cautions strongly against prematurely loosening policy. And I think that this is really what the stock market heard today, that the Fed's going to be higher for longer, can continue raising interest rates. And the Fed pivot or the Powell pivot isn't coming anytime soon, given Powell's remarks today.
Yeah, I mean, you and I were talking before this, and just nothing really seemed to kind of merit this decline this that we saw today in U.S. equity markets. If it wasn't indeed a response to Powell this morning, it's pretty much consistent with what he said during his presser, as well as a Q&A from a month ago during the FOMC meeting, and then pretty much consistent with what every single governor, Fed talking head, has come out, saying after that presser, just to reinforce the idea that they're going to continue with this restrictive policy for some time. If anything, they should probably amp it up a little bit, if you're listening to Bullard, or at least expedite it a little bit more. So I guess the market just waited for the corroboration from Powell actually today before they actually were maybe caught off guard by it. But other than that, I just don't really see much of a reason. Just nothing really new in this 8 minute 20 second little speech that he gave today.
It was funny to look at we're talking about the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is a fun one to look at because the numbers are larger, and you can, if you just look at the chart today, Powell started speaking, took a big dip, rebound, rallied back to where it was, and then took another big dip, and then just like a slow decline the rest of the day, went out on the lows, down over 1,000 points on the Dow today. So certainly, at least of those 30 Dow stocks, certainly they weren't planning for Powell to be that hawkish.
Yeah, and of those 30 Dow stocks, all of them were in decline too. So that's pretty bad breath, and that's a pretty bad sign. And closing, going on today is also a pretty bad sign. But I guess you could chalk up some of this to Powell speaking on a Friday, morning, late in the summer. So maybe it's a bit of the summer doldrums and low participation, let's say, moving it. But as I always like to say with these things, give the market and investors some time to digest over the weekend, especially on this Friday, data point, and see how things shape up the next week as they've had time to kind of think through some of the actions of the day.
That's right. And a lot of probably your more senior traders tuned in, and by 7:10 in Pacific time, at least when Powell was done, we're like, all right, weekend started.
So, yeah. They only have a couple more weeks, I guess. So that's from what I hear on the desk is that a lot of people are taking their two-weekers right now, or starting next week. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's building that Labor Day weekend as well.
That's right. And, you know, so that kind of, I guess that wraps up for this week. For next week, it's, as I mentioned, we get the big numbers at the end of the week. But on Tuesday, we do get house price data. So the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller 20-City Home Price Index comes out. That number is estimated to be up another 0.9%. That would bring the year-over-year number to 19.2. It's a little bit of a slowdown in terms of the absolute month-over-month price increase, but still very robust house price increases at 19%. On Tuesday, we also get the JOLTS job openings number. That's actually expected to decline from 10.7 million to 10.3. So that would be a good thing for the Fed to see as the labor market balance gets. Or labor market becomes more in balance. On Thursday, we get the ISM manufacturing estimate. It's estimated to come out at 52.0. We'll see if that corroborates the S&P global numbers that we talked about earlier. And then on Friday, it's a Pizza Friday, the real Pizza Friday, the non-farm payroll number. That's estimated to be 300,000. Remember, last month was a big, huge surprise of 528,000, higher than the highest estimate by far. So we should see much more kind of, you know, quote unquote normal type number this month, or at least economists are still estimating. Maybe they didn't learn from last month. They thought last month was an anomaly, but they expect that number to be much more normal, 300,000. The U3 unemployment number is estimated to remain flat at 3.5%. And that you remember, if you remember, the U6 underemployment was 6.7% last month. So looking at these estimates, the labor market still continues to be very strong and can still stomach some more Fed rate hikes. And finally, the labor force participation rate, that's estimated to tick up from 62.1% to 62.2. So if that all comes to pass, we'll still see a strong labor market, at least for the past month.
Yeah, definitely a big week for things to keep an eye on. I mean, just the JOLTS data and then Pizza Friday are just two things that you know that Powell and the rest of FOMC are going to be keeping eyes on themselves. So, you know, you could see some market movement, some exciting markets next week. And then, of course, the ISM, which is the OG PMI of the two. We'll see if it does corroborate. Then if so, then there's a little bit of slowdown, but right now the estimates seem to be hanging in there, so it could be an exciting week for us in store next week, depending on what we see.
Yeah, and it's the last payroll number before the Fed next Fed meeting, so as you said, I'm sure that the you know, Powell will have all eyes on that and on the JOLTS number.
Indeed.
All right, well, let's wrap it up there, Sam. I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in.
Yep. Thanks, everyone, for listening to us. Monday Morning Minutes. Don't forget, you can pick us up each Monday before the bell. And then we're available in all your favorite podcast platforms. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, or if you're not able to find us on your favorite platform, feel free to send us an email at minutes@doubleline.com or hit us up on the Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
Yeah. And don't forget that we'll be starting the topic of the week again. Not next week, but the week after. So if you have any questions, hit us up there. Anything that over the summer has piqued your interest. You can find more information about DoubleLine at our website, doubleline.com. YouTube channel is youtube.com/DoubleLineCapital. There is a very good Jeff Sherman podcast. He was a podcast guest on the Blockworks Forward Guidance podcast. And so that was a good listen or a good watch there on our YouTube channel. And make sure that you can follow Jeff and Sam on their Twitter for their podcast at Sherman Show Pod. Hope everyone has a great last week of August.
Yeah, thanks everyone, and good luck out there.
Please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates make any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Liability, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by any listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk. Copyright 2022, DoubleLine Capital.